Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Days after George Floyd was killed by officers from the Minneapolis Police Department, thousands of people marched in protest here in South Dakota. The Rapid City protests included clashes between protesters and self-described supporters of President Trump. The Sioux Falls outcry included violent confrontations with police after nightfall and several arrests. The mayor of Sioux Falls is still tweeting about support for law enforcement in trying times. Why did the death of this man by these officers create such an ongoing response across the nation and here at home? How are calls to defund the police or abolish the police changing the national dialogue? What progress has been made in community policing or police reform? And what's the work left to be done? Tonight, tune in to SDPB-TV for a new Frontline, Policing the Police 2020. Jelani Cobb is a staff writer for The New Yorker. He's a journalism professor at Columbia University and a Frontline correspondent. And he returns to In the Moment now with a preview of tonight's report. Jelani Cobb, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You had already done so much work looking into police misconduct and violence in communities. You had done Policing the Police, and then the video of George Floyd is released to the public. You watch it where? Tell me what that moment was like for you when you first heard the name George Floyd.
So I think these situations have tended to follow the same cycle for me. Mm-hmm. Which is that because my work requires that I interface with them a little bit closer than the general public, I think I've had an initial allergic reaction to that kind of information. And so when I heard about it and I heard what the video described, what the video depicted, I was very reluctant to see it. And I said, I'm not going to watch that. And that lasted for a day. And then predictably, as I knew, I had to write about it. I had to write about what was going on in the protests and so on. And so I sat down and kind of girded myself to watch the film. And it's 8 minutes, you know, famously at this point, 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I think I made it like 3 minutes through. And I still have not seen that entire film.
This is also happening for you, and I follow you on social media, and you're taking these images throughout the spring of New York City shut down, what the Columbia campus looks like, this sort of stark, surreal, these moments, these bodies in the hospitals. What about this moment, do you think? And then we have over Memorial Day, the video of George Floyd's killing. This is a lot to take in 2020. And then when we see the rage and we see the anger and we see peaceful protests and we see people throwing things, were you surprised that that this would turn into the national conversation that it is?
Yes and no. I was not surprised that it became a national outrage. I was surprised that it became a outrage that included all sorts of communities in the nation. And what I mean by that is that having covered the Trayvon Martin story, the Sandra Bland story, the Eric Garner story, Tamir Rice story, John Crawford story, Renisha McBride, Nakia Boyd, there's a long list, Ferguson and Michael Brown, there's a long list of these inciting incidents that have sparked a lot of outrage. But the outrage is almost entirely monochromatic, meaning that when you go to these rallies or these protests, these are generally Black people, maybe a handful of people from other communities, generally Black leadership that is demanding action, generally an affair that involves a white police officer, and not much else in terms of diversity. So when I saw the video, I thought immediately that lots of African Americans across the country were going to be outraged. It was shocking to see the extent to which that registered outside of the Black community. And I think the point at which I noticed that it was different, and I actually make mention of that in the film, is that when I saw the huge protests in Salt Lake City, and you know, Salt Lake City's population, black population, is like 1% or 2% of the city. And this was gigantic. There were people out, they were angry, they were outraged that Mr. Floyd had lost his life like that. And we don't really have a general frame of reference for that kind of thing happening, at least not broadly in the way that it did.
I want to ask you a couple things about that I saw in this front line as I watched it that I'd like your insight on. And one of them is this idea of what police officers are allowed to do and whether we're disturbed by what we see or whether we're disturbed by what they're legally allowed to do. When you're talking to a law enforcement, you know, representative from the union, and, you know, showing him a video and saying, is this an appropriate use of force? And he's like, absolutely. And talk a little bit, if you will, Dr. Cobb, about that idea of what legally and constitutionally cops are allowed to do and our response when we see it.
Yes, I thought the conversation was enlightening. I was talking with James Stewart, who is the head of the police union in Newark. And we were looking at a video in which an officer, there's a dispute, there's a kind of verbal confrontation between the officer and someone else. And then in the midst of it, the person walks away and turns around to walk back. And as he turns back around, the officer swings and knocks him unconscious. And then when he hits the ground, there are several more blows that rain down on his head. And that, I think, seemed excessive. I think many people would see that and think that it was excessive. And Mr. Stewart was talking about what's permissible under the law. This is not, you know, an officer is allowed to do this, an officer is allowed to do that. He says there's all this public outrage, but they don't know what the law actually permits officers to do. And I was trying to say to him, I think that's exactly the conflict. People are concerned about how much force the law allows police officers to use. And then, quite frankly, the leeway that they're given is partly a measure of the effectiveness of the police union itself, having negotiated and lobbied, you know, lawmakers for these possibilities, for these kinds of permissions. And so I think that we were talking about two different definitions of what officers can or should do.
And there's this other part that I wanted to ask you about where you're talking to Mayor Ross Baraka in Newark. And you go back to some of this work that we've spoken about before, what was happening in Newark a few years ago and the kinds of efforts Mayor Baraka is shooting for reform. And you go back and see, like, what is happening in Newark right now. But there's a moment in your interview with him where he says, every institution in America has the same values that the police department has. The police department, they're the ones who have guns. And he talks about the number of black women who die in childbirth because of what happens in hospitals. And I think that moment is worth expanding upon here, where when we talk about systemic racism and people say, you know, we saw Nikki Haley in the Republican National Convention saying it doesn't even exist. And people wonder what it is. You talk just really eloquently throughout this front line about the odds in black America, about the statistics. Say more about that moment where you're sitting with the Mayor Baraka, who you've known for years, and he's pointing out what is to some people obvious and to other people shocking, that this is not unusual. We are just noticing it more because cops are armed.
Yeah, I think that that's the case. And there's a point where we talk earlier in the film about something that happened when we were, I think we were 20 or 21 years old. The mayor and I were college classmates at Howard University, and we'd gone on a retreat in the mountains in upstate New York for activists, and a group of us went hiking. And when we came down from the mountain, there were seven of us, and there were seven police cars waiting for us at the bottom of the hill. one car for each of us. And, you know, they put us against the cars and searched us. And, you know, we were only guilty of being seven black male college students who'd gone hiking in a mostly white town. And so we had a similar kind of frame of reference for these kinds of situations. One of the things that he talked about, which is, I think, a reality that anybody who has studied this question eventually comes to, is that, you know, policing is not unique. People are saying, what is the problem with the police and African-Americans? Well, there isn't a problem with police and African-Americans. At least there isn't a problem that doesn't exist among other institutions. When you look at the major institutions in American life, our criminal justice system is not the only one with a racial disparity. The healthcare system, as we saw during COVID, most tragically, has all sorts of disparities that are aligned along the lines of race. Our educational system, our workplaces and employment systems, we go through, our housing, policies. We don't ever see a place that we can say we don't see these kinds of attitudes reflected. And the difference is that police, as part of their line of work, are allowed to use force on behalf of the state. So those attitudes can carry a different kind of implication if you're dealing with someone who's armed and has the degree of immunity that police officers have. And so I think that was, what he was talking about really was contextualizing what his job in Newark is. They are a city where they've had a consent decree for the federal government to oversee police reforms in the city. But they've also been struggling with COVID and trying to make sure that their citizens have what they need to deal with the pandemic. And trying to find means of attracting more employers to the city, and a city that is mostly black and brown. And so all those sorts of things can't be isolated from the issue that we're seeing with the police. And I think that was the point he was making.
So much in this Frontline tonight. You can watch it on SDPB TV tonight. You can also stream it online and watch it on the PBS app. Jelani Cobb, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate your time and hope you'll come back here to South Dakota again.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you about this film. We worked really hard on it and think it's something important at this particular time.